Well, here's your weekly BizNews Premium podcast, only for our subscribers. And what a week it was. American shares having their best three-week stretch now since November 2020. Interesting information coming out on the big movers on the JSE, and in our spotlight on the best listened to podcasts, a surprise number one for the past week. I'm Alec Hogg. Well, the Johannesburg Stock Exchange finished 2% up on the week, driven higher by financials. Industrials were flat, but the resources share were up by 2%. And the reason for the financial stocks doing so well was Standard Bank, which jumped 12% in the week. First Rand was up 6%, Investec 5.5%. But that Standard Bank followed a disclosure on Wednesday that it's trading better than the market had anticipated or been expecting, and the attributable earnings were up by 42% for the 9 months to the end of September. Now, we don't hear much about nine-month periods in South Africa, only when companies have to report in line with associates or parents who are listed internationally. And in this case, Standard Bank was giving information so that it could be included in its associate company in China, ICBC. That pulled the JSE higher. But as good as the JSE did, it really lagged global markets. In the United States, a strong end to the week saw the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ producing their best weeks since June. NASDAQ up 5.2%, the S&P 500 up 4.7%. Why the strength? Well, in the United States, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal which suggested that the Federal Reserve will increase interest rates by 0.75% at the next meeting, which is on November 1 and 2, but that thereafter interest rates will be raised more slowly starting in December. The market has been worried about the pace of interest rate rises and the thought that it would be too much of a shock on asset prices has been driving sharp sell-offs. The yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury rose for the 12th successive week. Now, this is important when you consider share prices because interest rates are determining those at the moment. It's the longest such run since 1987, but the U.S. Treasury is sitting at 4.2%, and it actually came down a little on Friday, and that was what gave shares on Wall Street a little kicker. Also in the United States, it's quarterly season. The quarterlies from the U.S. banks were better than anticipated. J.P. Morgan, Wells Fargo, Citigroup, three of them said on Friday that they're putting lots of money aside just in case the recession does hit. They'll have plenty to cover loan defaults. Interestingly, J.P. Morgan's profit was down 17% in the quarter to end September. Citibank's was down 25% and Wells Fargo's was down 31%. And yet the share prices went up because the market had been anticipating worse. Snap, however, didn't have that luxury. Its share price was down 28% after a further slowdown was reported in sales growth. Tesla, on the other hand, had a good third quarter. The share price there was up 3.5%. It produced a record of $3.7 billion in profit on $21.5 billion in sales. But the valuation of Tesla is worrying analysts. It is worth today as much as VW, General Motors, Toyota, Mercedes, Ford, BMW, Honda, and BYD combined. So you can get all of those companies or one Tesla. So it shows the Elon Musk fan club is certainly supporting the Pretoria boy. Netflix had a big week. This is a company whose volatility in its share price after financial results has become legendary. Well, in this week, the Netflix share price went from $240 to $290. This after the company said that it had added 2.5 million net new paid subscribers. That sits at 220 million in total for the third quarter. That's the 3 months to end September. It is more than double the forecast that the company had given, and it came after two quarters of subscriber losses. Netflix projects that it's going to add another 4.5 million subscribers in the fourth quarter. That got analysts happy. The one stock market that continues to underperform is the UK, where political turbulence continues to weigh on investor sentiment there. Liz Truss, the Prime Minister, resigned on Thursday, making her the shortest-serving UK Prime Minister ever. She followed her friend, the former Chancellor Kwasi Kwarteng, out of the corner office. In international currency markets, the dollar basket traded about 1% lower. The pound is now at $1.13 after being at $1.03 when Liz Truss's mini-budget was initially announced. Now that she's out the way, a lot of those proposals, which were seen by the market as being, well, just stir-crazy, are now going to be reversed. And as a consequence, or will not be implemented, and as a consequence, the pound is up significantly from that level. In the South African rand is sitting at 18 rand and 15 cents. That after touching 18.40 last week, but in the past month, we've come from 17 rand 60 to the US dollar. So although the dollar basket is easing a little, it's still very close to all-time highs, and the rand looking pretty weak despite that improvement in the past couple of days. Some really interesting stories on the JSE in the past week. Let's start off with the winners, though. Orion Minerals was up 10.5%. I told you a little earlier about Standard Bank, which was a real mover on the week, up 12.5%. But Orion Minerals is an interesting one. It got to 21 cents a share, but it's down from 38 cents in January. Reason for this is that on Friday, it issued an announcement to say that the company had agreed a funding package with the Industrial Development Corporation of South Africa worth 250 million rand, and this will fund early works at Prieska copper zinc mine in the Northern Cape, also at Okiep. And this is going to bring back into production these operations, which are now worthwhile mining again, given the recent surge in the copper price. It's going to start off, that 250 million rand, to be used to dewater the mine and then to start trial mining operations. But most importantly, it will finish off a bankable feasibility study around mid-2023, and that will allow the promoters of the company to raise project finance to get the mine back into full production and producing copper again. So a good news story on the JSE, and investors appreciated it and reacted accordingly. Sappi was up 8%. This is a company that was at, 40 Rand a month ago. It's now at 56 Rand 50, primarily the easier Rand. However, last Monday, Sappi released guidance to higher earnings for the fourth quarter, and investors are still assessing that and saying the stock is cheap. Novus, a printing company, was up 7.5% in the past week. It's now trading at 3 Rand 45 cents, which challenges its high of 3.50 cents in July. It's almost doubled from 2 Rand a share 5 months ago. And it's hard to believe that at 3.45 today, you could have bought this stock at 52 cents in mid-2020. No fresh news coming out of Novus, but it does appear as though somebody knows something that the rest of us don't, because that share price has been on a rip recently. Kumba was up 5.25% to 389 Rand a share off its bottom of 380 a month ago. But the stock was almost double the current share price in April. The reason for the increase is almost certainly the end of the Transnet strike, knowing that Kumba produces iron ore and it's got to get its iron ore to the ports and out to the to its customers. And now with Transnet strike finished, that becomes a, well, it can get back into business. As can Africa Rainbow Minerals, which was also up 5%. It's rallied strongly this one, though, in the past 3 months when it was trading at 200 Rand a share. It's now 266 Rand a share. Whereas Kumba is at its bottom for the year. Africa Rainbow Minerals has been moving in the right direction. Again, it would have benefited from the Transnet strike ending. And finally, to close off on the winners of the past week, we have OneLogix, the logistics company. Its share price was up 5% to 3 Rand and 9 cents, but on some rather sad news. Although the stock is now approaching pre-pandemic levels and was sitting at 1 Rand 70 2 years ago in the middle of the COVID pandemic, on Thursday it announced a management buyout cash offer of 3 Rand and 30 cents. And the reason for this is that the management say there's low liquidity in the shares. The listing is not worth much to them. In fact, the costs associated with having it are, to quote the management, not commensurate with the benefit it derives therefrom. They had issued a cautionary back in December when the share price was 2 Rand 40. If you'd listened then and bought the stock, you'd have put on 50% at the MBO cash offer. It appears as though the JSE is going to lose yet another company that could be an appealing prospect, especially for retail investors. OneLogix on its way out. At the other end of the coin, you might have hoped, or certainly those who own Murray & Roberts shares, that it had been delisted some time ago. 2 months ago, the shares were trading at 12 Rand. It dropped another 35% in this week to 4 Rand 30. And the reason for this is a SENS announcement on Monday, which was an update regarding ongoing disruption of what Murray & Roberts says is its order book delivery. The number of projects that it has, and it noted two in particular, are progressing slower than planned. That's going to impact the profit margin and working capital, and it's going to deliver a loss for the 6 months to the end of December. Those two projects, the one is in Texas, Pasadena, a project, it's called Project Traveler. It's at a petrochemical facility. And the other one is in Australia, Western Australia, Dongara, near that town, a gas project. Both of those projects are due for completion around the June 2023 year end. But now it appears as though the margin deterioration has been so bad that whether they add to the bottom line when they come through, as had been anticipated, no company goes into doing a big project like this without expecting to make profit, is a moot point. Murray & Roberts will be delivering a loss for the 6 months to end December, share price 4 and 30. Labatt, it was down 23% and it's at just 10 cents a share now after this cannabis company started the year at around 30 cents. Reason, on Monday it released financial results for the 9 months to end May, 5 months after that new year end, because they've now changed the year end from August to May. Revenue for the period was 21% lower than the previous 12 months. Operating loss, however, worsened from 28 million in the financial year to August last year to 37 million for this financial year. A lot of that was depreciation, but still, the worrying part of all of this is the net asset value of Labatt is down from 21 cents a share 9 months ago to 15.7 cents. And at the headline earnings level, there was a loss of 6.6 cents, which is a hefty number if your share price is only at 10 cents. Cash flow also worsened significantly, 5 million rand in the previous financial year to 18 million rand outflows, both of those, for these 9 months. What's been keeping Labatt going? Well, there's a rights issue of 20 million rand in the past 9 months. There was another rights issue in the previous financial year for 21 million rand. But despite all of that, it's just got 2.7 million rands in cash on the balance sheet. And this after putting the company onto the Frankfurt Stock Exchange in December last year. Adding to Labatt's concerns is an ongoing fight with South African Revenue Services. But there is some light potentially at the end of this tunnel. The company is upbeat. They say that they've made great investments and that the cannabis market is playing well, that they are going to be trading profitably and doing considerably better in the years ahead. But on top of all of this, there is an investment memorandum that the company has given to the Sultan of Brunei Investment Agency. It's for investment of $10.3 million into Labatt. If that comes through, you could probably see the share price going the other way next week. Telkom down 17% in the past week to R36.11. And that's after a 10% decline in the previous week, where we did report last weekend. You'll recall that there was an article saying that MTN would be walking away from Telkom. That was confirmed finally on Wednesday after the cautionary was withdrawn, and Telkom said that MTN terminated its discussions with the telecoms company on Tuesday, so the day before, even though the smart investors knew a week ago because of that article. But the reason for this was that Telkom was not prepared to give MTN exclusivity on a deal. And that tells us something quite interesting, because after MTN approached to buy out Telkom, Paul Harris's Rain also made an approach to talk about doing a merger, or indeed Telkom, buy us at Rain and then we'll be able to add 5G into your into your portfolio, and together we'll be stronger. Well, it seems like Telkom is taking the Rain story quite seriously, and as a result of that, it said it would not give exclusivity to MTN, and that deal fell apart. Now, remembering that Telkom's share price was R48 2 weeks ago, it's now R36. There's something more to all of this, and I would think that one shouldn't be dumping your Telkom shares just yet. Pick and Pay dropped 12% in the past week, down to R55.50. That's back to the level it was at in June. This followed interim results to end August, in other words, 6 months, that were released on Tuesday. The numbers look good. The turnover was up 11.5% year on year. The company is now normalized after the July last year unrest and the COVID restrictions on liquor trading. They also have implemented what they're calling the Ekuseni strategic plan that was launched on May the 17th. It's going to rejuvenate the supermarket format, splitting it into QualiSave, which would be lower end of the market, and Pick and Pays, which would be middle and upper end of the market. The company's doubling down on Boxer, its wholesale operation, and Pick and Pay clothing, both of those who've got big market opportunities, and on its online business. But despite all of that good news, share price down 12%, analysts must have been expecting more. Another big loser was Core Potash, that did even worse, down 15% this one to 17 cents a share, and highly speculative, it appears. The slide has been continuous in the last 4 months after it was at 30 cents, so it's virtually down by half in 4 months. Reason for this, the Minister of Mines of the Republic of Congo, what used to be known as Congo Brazzaville, has, quote, expressed discontent with aspects of the administration of subsidiary companies in the Republic of Congo and apparent lack of progress in financing the Kola project, unquote. This came through a letter from the Minister of Mines of that country, and it followed the arrest of two senior Core Potash employees by Congolese police. The company says it's got no idea why they were arrested. No reasons have been given. It has 30 days to respond to the letter. It just emphasizes again the risk of doing business in dubious third world geographies. And finally, on the losers of the past week, Robex was down by 9%. It's lost considerable ground since an 18-month recovery. Got it to 42 Rand in May, where it peaked, and it's now, well, slumped about a quarter from there. Reason for the decline of the past week was a trading statement on Friday. Again, it's a mystery to most people why the share price would have fallen. The company said that its headline earnings per share would be up by between 10 and 20% in the 6 months to the end of September. That would put it on an annualized figure of 3 Rand 20 a share, price earnings of around 10 in an industry where lots of other companies have gone to the wall or disappeared. Interesting one for your notebook to have a look at. That's Robex. Time now to have a look at the best listened to podcasts of the past week. What we do here is have a look at the data, and just on the podcasts on the Biz News Radio channel. And by the way, you can access all of our podcasts by going onto Spotify or onto iTunes, or indeed just Googling Biz News Radio, and the numbers or the channels will come up. I always ask our friend Mr. Monster Mash just to give me a little bit of help, but we'll keep him under control this week.
Thank you, Mr. Hart. Well, in position three this week is...
Koki Koyman. He did an interview with me on Monday where he was talking about the opportunities for banking stocks. It's a really good interview, so I'm not surprised that there's been so much support from the Biz News community for this one. But he also applied his mind to grey listing. You might recall that 2 weeks ago I did an interview with Magnus Haystack, who was very concerned about grey listing. Koki doesn't share his concerns. Here's the reasons why.
So the cost of doing business, especially in terms of exports and imports in South Africa, will increase. I don't think it will be as dramatic, but there will be a negative effect, a further drag on, if you think of it, the most important thing that to grow jobs, you want capital to be put into businesses in South Africa, and that capital becomes more expensive, so your hurdle rate goes up, and then you might just rather sit with the money in government bonds, which, by the way, is not risk-free, but you can earn 10% in government bonds. Why should I go and risk that starting a business when the cost of doing that is increasing? And that's the negative of grey listing.
The second highest listened to podcast of the past week by the Biz News community is...
Gayton McKenzie. My goodness, what an interesting man. He has zero filters, this politician, the head of the Patriotic Alliance. We have become used to politicians being excessively diplomatic, excepting when they're in parliament. When they're out of parliament, they tend to, well, not mince their words as much as we should have hoped they would. Anyway, Gayton McKenzie doesn't belong to that category. He is a man who says it exactly as he sees it. A former jailbird. He spent 7 years in jail, 7 years of a 15-year sentence for armed robbery. The reason he got into politics in 2013 and started his own party, the Patriotic Alliance, was because he said that he wanted to address the gangland violence in the Western Cape, because he said that none of the other political parties were paying it any attention. Well, he's had some interesting developments on that side, but McKenzie has now become much more of a national figure, and the reason for that was the Patriotic Alliance is something of a kingmaker in a few of the municipalities where it did pretty well in the past election, in 2021 election. After its first two elections that it participated in, it came in with 0.06% of the national vote, And suddenly in 2021, McKenzie and his cohorts hit a chord somewhere amongst their constituency, and they pulled in nearly 1% of the national vote. Now, that gave them enough seats, 8 seats in Johannesburg out of the 270, 8 seats, though, that were critically important and were able to either put the DA into power or, as they did in the past couple of weeks, remove themselves from that coalition and put the ANC into power. And that has got McKenzie being public enemy number one for many people, but including Paul Palazzi, the mayor of Johannesburg, or the ex-mayor of Johannesburg, who I also interviewed in the past week. McKenzie has also given the Knysna municipality back to the ANC from the Democratic Alliance. He's got good reasons, in his mind anyway, as you will hear in the podcast that has done so well in the past week. But the little clip that I'm going to play you now talks to a different part, talks to his friendship with Rob Herzog. And in this, he says we need to give Katie a big vote of thanks. And that's Rob Herzog's wife, Kate, a medical doctor who hails initially from New Zealand. But have a listen.
My strength has always been being underestimated. Now, when a guy like Rob Herzog speaks about you, if people that don't look at you normally will be like, maybe there's something there. But this is what I want to say about Rob, is that the newspaper called me and they said, we just saw on the business, I think it was Sunday Times who called me, we said, Rob Herzog says, you should be president. What do you say about that? I said, well, I'm shocked to hear that, but Rob is probably one of the smartest people I know. And I wouldn't argue with him if I was you. And I said that to the journalist. I said, don't argue with such a smart man. He sees something. So the one thing that he did right for this country, it's a gift that Rob Herzog gave this country. It is, he has shown business people. He says, where's the Harry Oppenheimer of our time? He is the Harry Oppenheimer of our time. I mean, you look at Gareth Ackerman. He spoke up. You look at Neil Froneman. He spoke up. You look at the guy of Nedbank. People are now speaking up. They're speaking truth to power, which was a taboo. Rob Herzog came, and Rob Herzog just went for him, and people are now sitting up. He has made the ANC better, Rob, because they know he's going to come for them if they... Now they... What he says, they listen. They all watch Buzz News. That I can tell you for a fact. Because then they know, because you bring very unconventional characters like myself to the show. So, Alec, let me tell you, I think we owe a huge debt of gratitude to Katie, because, you know, she has allowed Rob to sit, let him out of the house. and he's going to, I think he... I said to him, I said, your problem is you complain a lot. You complain more, so much. And then he said, what should I do? I said, do more. And I can tell you all the things that we have advised him to do. He went on his own tangent, and then he's doing those things for this country now.
And the number one listened to podcast among the Biz News community this week is...
I must admit it was quite a surprise, although I do think that it was a fascinating interview with Rian du Plessis, a former executive at Rand Merchant Bank, former chief executive of Comparex, one of the big tech companies on the JSE, and then, until fairly recently, chief executive of Pumalele. In fact, after Rian left Comparex, we thought that he would probably go sailing off into the sunset. But he was pulled back into Pumalele, where Marcus Juster was a big shareholder and one of the main board members. And Rian was very disappointed, no doubt, as all the shareholders were, when that company was put into business rescue. The reason for him getting into the spotlight again this week, however, was after the South African Reserve Bank got an Anton Piller. And what that is, it's a court order which the other party doesn't even know about, which you don't get too often from the courts, but it enables the plaintiff, in this case the South African Reserve Bank, to attach assets and through a surprise raid. Now, that doesn't mean they go in there and take away the assets of the other party, but it does mean that they make sure what the assets are so that they can't be sold. In this case, it's all to do with Marcus Huerster. And the way I'm reading it is that the Hawks and the National Prosecuting Authority are struggling to find the right kind of case to put Huerster into jail. But the South African Reserve Bank is doing an Al Capone on him, where you might recall the gangster from Chicago of the 1930s was put away into jail on tax evasion charges. The Reserve Bank is attacking Huerster on the basis of what looked pretty obvious exchange control contraventions. Here's Rian du Plessis and his thoughts on the obvious question that I had to ask. Are you still in touch with Marcus Huerster? Do you talk?
Yes, I do.
What's his state of mind given these recent developments?
Look, I think anybody who spends most of their day with lawyers defending themselves would not be of the finest of minds, but Marcus is strong, and he is determined to seek his day in court. He's under strict advice from his lawyers not to reply to the press and play a press game, and to answer for each allegation as it is made to them in the appropriate forum. I believe that that is sound advice. I reiterate, I have no idea of what he has done. And if he has done something as untoward as the media is making it out to be, and as appears to be, then he must answer in the appropriate forum for it. And he's either guilty or he's not guilty. But that's not for me to answer. That's for Marcus to answer. He's taken advice from highly qualified and highly expensive legal people. And I think that that's what the Constitution also allows him to do, is to answer in the appropriate forum. So.
But after this, how is he going to keep paying those expensive legal people if all the assets now are attached?
Can't be sold. I don't know. He would probably need to bring an order because there has to be fairness. A person must be able to defend himself. I think our Constitution would not allow deprive a person from using his own assets to defend himself against an unproven action. I would be surprised if our court or our Constitution would permit that. I really would be astounded.
And I hope you enjoyed this week's premium podcast. It behoves me to thank you, as always, for your support. The premium members like yourself are the ones who keep BizNews sustainable. And we thank you. I'm Alec Hogg. Until next week, cheerio.